Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of evolutionary voices for the quantum age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience evolutionary voices for the quantum age Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com. Welcome to What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley, inviting you to open to the radical notion that in your life, whatever you perceive to be in your way is the way. In other words, your challenges, whether they be relationships, compulsions, finances, or illness, come with gifts embedded in them that can bring healing and allow you to experience the joy of being fully alive. Mary is a counselor, awakening mentor, inspirational speaker, and the author of What's in the Way is the Way, The Gift of Our Compulsions, Belonging to Life, and The Magical Forest of Aliveness. What's in Your Way is the Way with Mary O'Malley is part of Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Welcome to What's in Your Way is the Way. I'm your host, Mary O'Malley. I'm so glad you're listening. Today we are exploring becoming friendly with our minds. What a novel concept. We live in the kind of mind that is happy when life is the way it wants it to be and unhappy when it's not. But the difficulty is that life is constantly changing. Some days it's sunny, some days it's not, some days it's easy, some days it's difficult, some days we're feeling very spacious inside, and sometimes we're tight and small. So, the peace that is our birthright doesn't come from getting ourselves and our lives the way we want them to be. We can literally spend our whole lives doing this. But that is the endless game of struggle. Stephen Levine, my main mentor, once told a story about being at the deathbed of a 93-year-old woman, and she said, "It can't end now because it hasn't started yet." When we're caught in the busyness of our minds, we're cut off from life. But there is a whole other way to be with life. A whole other world right outside our busy, busy minds. A world that is our home. The best way I describe this is imagine the ocean of being, beautiful ocean, and floating on that ocean is a small, opaque bubble, which I call the bubble of struggle. And even if you've heard me talk about this before, many times, pause for a moment and let that in. The bubble is opaque. Most people are not even aware of the ocean of being, of their true essence. And they spend their lives in the tight and small world of their minds, trying to make life be what they want it to be. And, you know, the struggles are mostly little ones, you know, like, oh, my nose is too big, or I've got a corn on my foot. But oftentimes they can become really big struggles. But since you're listening to this, you are on the journey home, no matter what is going on in your life, no matter what your mind is doing, no matter how you feel about yourself, no matter what challenges are there. So, the question is, how do we come home? Well, it's everything I share in these radio shows, my blogs, the courses, my books, etc. But what I want to explore today is discovering how to be friendly with our minds. But we're not usually friendly with our minds. We're either just lost in them, tumbling from one thought to another all day long, or we're judging our minds for being too much of this and not enough of that, too selfish, too angry, too busy, or less than everybody else's, or on and on and on. But our minds are just like you and me. When somebody listens, really listens, and acknowledges what is happening in their mind calms down. I want to share with you an experience I had the other day at my oncologist's office that really highlights what I'm talking about here. Now, I love waiting. What I mean by that is that when life puts me in a place of waiting, like a long line at whatever, wherever I am, or a long wait at the doctor's office, or even a long stoplight, I call these the pause that refreshes. To me, this is life saying, slow down. Don't go into the future. This is life right now, and settle in. And, you know, some waitings are easier than the others. This was a very difficult waiting day because it went on and on and on. And when that happens, there can arise inside of me a very unsettled feeling. I used to judge this unsettledness, thinking I was just an entitled Karen wanting things my way. And if you don't know what a Karen is, in recent years it has become a widespread meme referring to a specific type of middle-class white woman who exhibits behavior that stems from privilege. And so there's been this secret feeling inside of me that, oh my God, I just am an entitled person. This was even before the Karen thing showed up. But as I began to get to know this unsettledness, I could see that it comes from the feeling of being trapped, because that was my childhood on so many levels. So over the years, waiting has become easier and easier as I have understood and said hello to this unsettledness. And the more that I do that, the more I am very skillful when I do need to say something because I'm not reacting to the situation. This is just what is, and something may need to be said. But on this day, I think life decided that I was ready for postgraduate work on waiting and this feeling of unsettledness. So I arrived early for my appointment because I have to drive the 405 freeway, which here in Seattle is our most notorious freeway. And the drive is about 35 minutes if traffic is absolutely flowing. That has only happened a couple of times when I've gone down there. But it's a lot longer if it's not, you know, and that's why I always leave early. And when you arrive and park, you have to call the office for them to give you permission to come into the building. I called and waited 10 minutes without any response. But again, there was no reaction. There was just, okay, this is life. There is that softening in my belly, the deepening of my breath, and just an opening. I mean, life is really magical, even sitting in a parking lot. So I then called again because, you know, 10 minutes is more than enough time. And they answered and they let me in. And then I settled into the waiting room. And they didn't call me back to get my vitals for 45 minutes. Now, that has happened a few times when I've been down there. And, you know, this is the doctor's office that I talked about a number of radio shows before, that I drove all the way down there and waited for almost an hour and to only find out that they didn't have the bone marrow kit for my bone marrow test on that day. But, you know, I've learned how to work with it. This is just how this office operates. But in this waiting to go back and get my vitals, which has to be done before I go into the infusion room, this unsettled feeling began to arise. And I have worked with it enough over the years that I'm pretty gentle with it rather than judgmental, reminding it, okay, there's no such thing as waiting. This is just the living moment of life, and we're not trapped. We're not a child anymore. And I would then come back to being fully present for the room and the people that were in the room. Little did I know that this was just the beginning of the waiting dance on that day. I was down there for my vitamin C infusion, which helps immensely with this kind of cancer. And as I entered the infusion room, I checked in, found a chair, and settled in. But a nurse didn't come over. By this time, the unsettledness was getting stronger. And I had to work more with my breath because, as we've talked about before, you know, especially that long, slow out-breath is so powerful because it massages the vagus nerve, which is the key to the fight-or-flight part of our nervous system, to the getting tight around whatever we are experiencing. But I went up to the desk, and they said, oh, sorry, we'll be with you in a moment. 10 minutes later, a nurse I had never worked with before came to me with all the supplies and then went to help a couple of other people and didn't come back for 10 more minutes. When he came back, he said, oh, I remember you. You're the difficult one. He was talking about my veins. I told him I hadn't had any trouble with my veins and I hadn't worked with him before. And he said, oh, yes, I remember you. I just let it go. So on this day, it was the exact opposite. He got into one vein and then fiddled with it and fiddled with it and fiddled with it. Pulled it in, pulled it, you know, not, you know, put it in and then pulled it almost all the way out and tried to, they had to take the blood test for the doctor and he couldn't get the blood to flow and then he finally changed veins and then as soon as he went into that vein, blood gushed out. I mean, isn't this life, you know, feast or famine? And it was all over the chair, the floor, you know, his arms, his supplies, and everything. And so then he had to mop all that up and try to, you know, get a good flow out of this vein. And this took over half an hour. And he said twice during that time, don't be surprised if the next time I see you, I don't say hello. You know, a lot of years ago, that would have bothered me, but I just knew that was just his stuff. I didn't react. I had enough to deal with my reaction to, you know, this was painful, you know, this pulling in and out and then this, you know, trying to find another vein and so on and so forth. So thank God I have cultivated the ability to bring my attention back to myself rather than being hooked into somebody, what somebody else is saying, or being hooked by my reactions to what was going on. It helped that my chair was by a window, and I could look out the window, and that spaciousness, because it was a view. You know, Seattle is between two sets of mountain ranges, and so there was no blockage. There was some, you know, bare trees, but it didn't block the view of the Olympic Mountains. And so this reminded me, breathe myself into this moment. This is what life is offering right now. But of course, my mind was getting more and more unsettled as he kept on fiddling with my veins. And I would sometimes fall into that unsettledness, and I would tighten. I would hold my breath, and I would tighten. But then that woke me up. That okay, going into reaction again, and then I would step out of my mind and say, "Hello, I see you." Letting it know I understood how challenging this was. Thank God I understood this feeling of being trapped, so there wasn't any judgment for how reactive my mind was. But this is what I mean about being friendly with our minds. I talked with it. I reminded it that even though this is uncomfortable, this is life. And if I tighten down around it, I miss being present for my life. I can also remember saying, let go, let go. Because, God, it was just such a different. I think a number of radio shows before we did the up arrow and the down arrow. It's so different to go into the up arrow. The up arrow is the busy mind that is reacting or planning or fixing or jockeying for a position or trying to figure things out or trying to understand. And usually when you're up in your mind, you hold your breath. It's not safe for your body to stay open when you're not present for it. And so I was doing, I was like a yo-yo, up, down on that day, because this was dealing with, you know, just a very, very deep terror inside of me, the terror of being trapped. And so I can remember saying, and let go, it's safe. It's safe. And then the mind would let go, and my belly would soften. That's really what happens, you know, when you come back to the living moment, and my breath would open again. And then I was just here. And yes, it was unpleasant, but a lot of life is unpleasant. And unless we learn how to be with the unpleasant, we will spend a lot of our lives caught in struggle, cut off from the joy of being here, even when it's difficult. I could also remember reminding it that if I was on my deathbed, I would give everything for this experience, for any experience, even this difficult one. And that would bring space around the experience. I also remember reminding my mind that this is just a wave passing through. This is not going to last forever. And if I tighten down around it, it amplifies the struggle. And if we soften, things will be easier inside. The more I let my mind know that it's okay, that it was feeling the way it was feeling, and that this moment of my life is exactly what needs to be, then my mind would let go. I didn't have to try to let go of my mind. We're so used to fixing and changing and trying to rise above the struggles that we totally miss the phenomenal healing of meeting our experience with our hearts. The heart, which is our main brain, which is so different than our dualistic mind, liking and disliking and wanting and resisting and all that, and the heart is inclusive. It doesn't judge. It has compassion. And the more I came back from the reactions, because I had met them with compassion, to resting in my breath and in this moment, being friendly with my mind, because it was having a pretty hard time, the more the reactions just passed right on through me like clouds in the sky. After he left, I had some space to more deeply meet and give space to the struggles in my mind, so then I could simply relax into mind. But this wasn't one continual relaxation. It was my mind grabbing my attention and chewing on another problem and then recognizing it, acknowledging what my mind was experiencing, being friendly with it, so it would let go again. And this is what it's like living in our minds. You know, it's a roller coaster. You know, if you really watch your mind, you'll see it's a roller coaster, and it's an opening and a closing. But what I was adding on that day makes all the difference. The ability to relate to my mind rather than from it. But life wasn't done with me yet. I had a 2:30 appointment with the oncologist, and the nurse didn't take my blood until 2:30. So my mind had something else to chew on. It would grab my attention and pull me into that up arrow, being concerned that the blood test wouldn't be ready for the doctor. But again, I was able to keep my mind company and reminded that everything was unfolding exactly as it needs to. And of course, the doctor was late that day. They didn't take me back to see him until 3:30. And then again, I waited. We're going to call this the waiting day. And, of course, there was more frustration in my mind, but more spaciousness in my whole being. I wasn't caught in the mind's ongoing story about what was going on. But life wasn't done with me yet in this teaching of how to be present for all this unsettledness that oftentimes for me comes from waiting. When I got done with the doctor and came back into the infusion room, I nodded to the nurse that I was ready to be unhooked. This is the nurse that said, you know, you're the difficult one, you know. And even though he nodded in return, he never came. I finally asked another nurse if she would unhook me, and she did. And then I shared my experience with her and asked that I did not have, could I not have to work with him again? And she said, yes, I will make sure that that happens. But life still wasn't done with me. Because of all the delays, usually this takes about an hour and a half, and this was over 3 hours that I was there, and because of all the delays, I ended up in rush hour traffic on 405 going home. But again, the ability to not get seduced in the struggles of my mind and the spaciousness that comes from that was so freeing. And even though it was rush hour, there was a continuously good flow of traffic. I was just amazed. But needless to say, when I got home, I was really, really tired. So, how do you learn how to not be at the mercy of this thing that talks in your head all day long? I call it the storyteller because that's what it does. It tells stories all day long. Mickey Singer, the author of the phenomenal bestseller, he calls it the roommate. I love that. I love that. It's just even a little bit more space than storyteller because there's a roommate, somebody else that's living in your head that's not you. Eckhart Tolle calls it the mind made me. Oh, untethered soul. Just remembered Mickey Singer's book called The Untethered Soul. And, of course, Eckhart Tolle is the phenomenally best-selling author of The New Earth and The Power of Now. And he calls it the mind made me, that your mind, when you were growing up, especially the first 6 years of your life, made a me. And it's a me that talks in your head all day long, But what he's basically saying is your mind made it. It's not you. You are that which can see what's going on in your head. You are awareness itself. You are not the content of your thoughts. So the first step is just let in this message today. Go back to the metaphor of the ocean of being and the bubble of struggle. You'll really let that in. The bubble is so tight. It's tiny, small, opaque. We're in there busy fixing and changing and rearranging and rising above, not being aware that this isn't our home. This is just a place we got caught into as we were growing up, and the ocean is our home. So most of our healing is all about managing our thoughts and feelings. And while this is necessary at times and it helps calm things down, it's not where lasting healing lies. That lies in being able to step out of your mind, becoming curious about what it is doing. It is the difference between feeling unsettled and being lost in that feeling and all your reactions to it to, oh, unsettledness is here. I see you. It's okay that you are here. The second step, which is another thread through everything I share, is the understanding that life is, and this is from What's in the Way, is the way my book, this came all in one fell swoop as I was writing it. Life is set up to bring up what has been bound up so it can open up to be freed up so you can show up for life. And since I wrote that book, I've added something to it. Life is set up to bring up what has been bound up. All this struggles in our mind. So we can listen up. That's what I added. And that's what I was doing on this day. So it can open up. Just like, you know, my struggles around waiting would calm down. So it could open up. And they're freed up. They pass right on through us when we actually are present for them, so we can show up for life. And so I'm going to say it all in one fell swoop again and add the new thing. Life is set up to bring up what has been bound up so we can listen up, so it can open up to be freed up, so we can show up for life. So this is what I was doing that day. I was listening, and then I would get caught, and then I would come back and ground, use my breath, had to use my breath. It's one of the quickest ways to calm down the agitation in my mind, and then I wouldn't be the victim to this. It wasn't happening to me. It was happening for me, and that's something that your mind will debate until the cows come home. But the more you relax into life, the more you really, truly see your life is for you. It's a highly intelligent process that is giving you the exact set of experiences you need in order to get free of the bubble of struggle. And when you understand that your life is for you, you can more easily unhook from the mentality that says life is happening to me. And on that day, I would have moments like that, you know, and then just frustration would arise. I would get tight, you know. And if I had gotten lost on that day, I could have easily been caught in a world of frustration and anger, fuming about how bad this office is run and judging people and needing to let everybody know how bad this was. And sometimes it's important, you know, just like it was important for me to request not to work with this nurse anymore. But sanity, true sanity comes when the main thrust of your life is that whatever is happening is for you. If I hadn't known that, hadn't really known that this dance with this doctor's office on that day was for me, I would have just been a victim and probably, you know, well, not so much anymore, but years ago, gone home and complained and told everybody how horrible they were. We don't see that we're the ones that pay the price for that, that we are caught in the struggles in my mind. So the third thing is to start small. You know, somebody asked Stephen Levine, how long does this take? And he said, it's the work of a lifetime. And what I add is, my God, you're listening to these words, so you are on that journey. And it is the journey of, you know, there's a lot of moving pieces in our mind. There's the story of despair and all of its sub, you know, headings, and there's the story of anger and all of its subheadings, and fear and impatience and shame and, you know, loneliness and all its subheadings. And so I love metaphors. You know, picture is worth a thousand words, and I love the wind tunnel metaphor that living exclusively in our minds is like living in a wind tunnel. And it's a totally, you know, a glass wind tunnel, so people can see you, and people can see you whether you know it or not. You know, people are much more attuned than they think they are about, you know, feeling what other people are doing and going through. But here you are, and you spend your life just trying to ride that wind. And every once in a while, you get it right. So then that inspires you to keep on fixing yourself and changing yourself. But then all of a sudden, the wind stops, and you fall flat on your belly, or the wind tears your clothes off, and in this wind tunnel with you is a 10,000-piece picture puzzle. And, you know, the picture puzzle pieces are plummeting your body, and one day they, you know, one gets in your eye, and so on and so forth. What we're doing is stepping out of the wind tunnel of our minds and going, wow, that's a wind tunnel. Look at all those pieces moving around, and bringing a piece out, or maybe even two, and then putting them on a table that's right beside the wind tunnel. And if you ever put together a 10,000-piece picture puzzle, it takes time. And, you know, for a while, you're just putting the fully white pieces together and then the fully green pieces together. And then you're putting the green pieces that have something else on them in their different area. But it takes a while. And it doesn't make sense for a while. Of course, you're working on the outside of the pile, you know, all the puzzle, all the straight pieces, you know, and that doesn't give you really any glimpse of really what the puzzle is about. But slowly and surely, we get caught back into the wind tunnel as soon as we put pieces down there. But slowly and surely, more quickly, you remember, oh, I'm just in the wind tunnel of my mind. That's what I was doing on that day. Ah, caught. And the tightening of my body would really help me wake up to that. And then more quickly you come out and you bring more pieces. And slowly and surely you begin to be able to see the picture on the puzzle. You begin to be able to really see your mind. And the more you can see it, the more you are not seduced into its stories. So the key, and I just spoke about it, is that when you're caught in the stories in your mind, in the wind tunnel of your mind, you'll get tight. You know, most of us are not even aware that we're shallow breathers. And, oh, my God, no wonder we're tired and we don't feel well. You know, this body, you know, what is it? It takes 32 molecules of oxygen for one molecule of glucose, which is those two main fuels for each one of your cells. It takes 32 molecules of oxygen for the cell to burn, work efficiently. And we hold our breath a lot of the time. Don't judge this. Don't try to make yourself, okay, now I'm going to breathe deeply, you know. Just begin to notice that you hold your breath. And when you're in a place that the mind is struggling with life, you will not only hold your breath, but you will hold the favorite parts of your body that tighten in reaction. It used to be in my neck. I had horrible migraine headaches many, many years ago. But I began to explore it. And I began to relate to it rather than from it and get to know what it was, the stories in my head that caused me to tighten in that way. And I don't have them anymore. Every once in a while, when I'm really, really challenged, I'll have this faint feeling of this tightness that goes from, it's like my shoulder blade up my neck and over my head and into my eye. But that's just a reminder that I'm really, really, there's a lot of struggle going in my mind, and my mind needs me. So, at the beginning of unhooking from your mind, it's enough to just recognize that you're caught. It's just so powerful, you know, and just watch the mind say, okay, well, I'm not going to do that anymore, or, you know, I'm going to calm things down, you know. Well, yes, it can be very helpful to go to the breath. You know, I love the long, slow out breath, but that's what works for me. And I was working with somebody the other day who is in charge of a major company, and he asked for a session with me because his mind had just been racing, and more, you know, he could only sleep a few hours, you know, every night, and then his mind would race, and it wake him up, and then he would get caught in the racing mind. And through our conversation, you know, a lot of what I've been sharing today, his mind began to calm down, and he began to be able to pull his attention out of his struggling mind and just lengthen his breath for a bit before the mind would take back over again. And that frustrated him. And I said, no, this is just where your mind is right now. But be gentle, but be persistent. Just keep on coming back. And slowly and slowly, his body began to soften. Slowly, he could feel his body. Slowly, as his mind calmed down, he began to feel this moment. And, of course, we were quiet during this part of our time together. And then he said, but my mind wants to just pick up. And I say, of course it does, because it's been really challenged lately, and you have been lost in it. There's been nobody home, nobody, you know, saying hello and saying, I see how difficult this is. You're having a challenging time. And so then he learned how to not fight this, and he would go back and forth, just like I did on that day. I probably had much more lengthy times of forth than he did, you know, and much shorter times of going back into my mind. But slowly and surely, he began to see how he could begin to work with his mind and how his breath would help him ground again. You know, another person I worked with who was in a high-stress job, and she said that when it just got to be too much, she would just go and endlessly scroll through social media. And what I said to her is that can help, you know, to a point. But what it is, it's a going away from what you are experiencing. It's giving you a little bit of break from whatever you are experiencing. But it's not taking you to the deep peace that you long for. In fact, it's taking you further away because you're going into your mind and out into social media. And as she really understood this now, she's using her scrolling through social media time that really wakes her up now. There's something that remembers that, oh my God, I am just highly stressed, And I need myself. I need my own breath. I need to open my breath. I need to be present for the struggles that are happening so that my struggles calm down. But as you learn how to do this, know that just a moment of being here is enough, for they begin to show you that there is your mind and all the stories. Remember the roommate that talks in your head all day long? And you begin to see how much it struggles. And then you begin to see there is life. There is a huge difference between being here for life as it is and being caught in the stories in our head. And these kind of moments accumulate, even if you can only, you know, stay there for, you know, 1 second or a split second, you know, just to recognize a breath, those moments accumulate. So it is very helpful. This is the fourth thing. Very, very, very helpful to give you a few yourself a few minutes every day where you choose a focus that is life. It could be, of course, your breath, as we've been talking about. It could be sensations in your body. It could be just listening, closing your eyes and listening to the music of your life. And no matter how many times your attention wanders back up into your mind, do not be dismayed. You've only been caught in your mind for most of your life. And then gently bring it back to your focus, even if the attention bounces right back up into the mind. And I've said this before, Stephen Levine, I was a part-time meditator for about 10 years before I met Stephen, and now I've meditated every day for decades. And he said, if you sit for an hour and bring your attention back to your focus one time in an hour, that is time well spent. Because those are moments where you're pulling your attention out of your mind and you're strengthening the muscle of your attention and you're beginning to see, oh my God, there's my stories about life, and then there is life. So I think that last thing is how to come home, you know, and how to come home and how to use your mind rather than being lost in it, is to really develop compassion for your mind. There's a wonderful Stephen Levine quote. I think I've said it in a good deal of these shows, but it's such a powerful quote. When you finally see how much fear there is in your mind, you will turn to it like a mother turns toward a frightened child. We gave our minds a task that they were never meant to do, be in charge of life. And that is, it's just so anxious deep inside for all of us. I don't care if you are the CEO of a corporation, you know, or the president of a company, of a country, you know, we all live in this mind that is very anxious, that is trying to do life and do life right. And it is so powerful when you not only learn how to step outside of your mind, but you also begin to have compassion for it. That's what I was doing on that day. I see, this is hard. Of course, this is hard. I am here with you. You are not alone. But it's really important that we've never been trained in this. In fact, we've been trained in going away, and so we are actually afraid of stepping out and being present for what we are experiencing and bringing it the light of our own heart. Why are we so afraid? We're so afraid because this is about grounding and opening to life again. On the last time that we were this fully present with life, we got the living bejesus scared out of us when we were very young. But what I oftentimes say to my mind when it's resistant to actually being present for something that it doesn't like, you know, I say, but remember, this is where the good stuff is. This is where the doorway is to back home. And all I can tell you is, even though your mind thinks that there's monsters inside of you, there's just children in monster costumes, and the safest thing you'll ever do is turn and be present for what you are experiencing. So my life, this is a process. You know, remember what Stephen said, it's the work of a lifetime. And my life is a very good example. At the beginning of learning meditation, I couldn't even notice a breath. It was way too intimate. But slowly and surely, I began to come back to my breath for a moment here and a moment there. And then over the years, I began to settle more into my body. Oh, so wonderful to come home to my body. So wonderful. And then slowly and surely, that quiet, still space that resides right outside of our minds, that is here within us, I began to rest in it. You know, and so, you know, it would take, you know, for the past maybe 10 years, a few breaths, you know, and then a little acknowledgement of what my mind was doing, and then it let go. And of course, you know, there would be thoughts that would, you know, arise, just like clouds, you know, and they were just passing through the vast sky of who I really am. And somebody asked me, how long do I meditate? And I say, I meditate until it's done. Because the more you connect with yourself, a meditation is a journey, and you just know, you know, when it's done. But this is not my meditations now. Ever since the cancer began to show up in my body, and this was long before I knew I had cancer, my mind was more unsettled in my meditations than it had been for years. And this didn't really upset me too much. I didn't know what I was going through, but some of my best meditations have been when my mind was really unsettled, because just one moment of returning to my breath and one moment of just having compassion for my mind, you know, seeing it and touching it with my heart, is just so powerful. And now that I'm taking this drug that keeps the cancer from killing me, but it's also very hard on my body, this is superfood for my struggling mind. The other day, I was noticing myself inviting the mind to come back into that field of being because I wanted to be there. You know, I was homesick. Oh, but my mind wasn't ready. And it took me a few minutes to recognize that I was not acknowledging my mind. I was trying to make something happen. And as soon as I saw that, I said, oh, I see you're upset. I see this is hard for you, especially how yucky I feel today. I see you're afraid to come back to this moment. You don't need to let go. I will just be here with you. Oh, my God, can you feel the heart of that? At that moment, all struggle let go. And I was just present for what was. And, of course, my mind began to let go. Remember, our mind is just like you and me. When somebody really, truly listens without judgment, without wanting things to be different than what they are, without trying to fix it, there's something inside of us that lets go. And I've had just some powerful meditations lately, and yes, I opened into, you know, every meditation, even if I'm really, really not feeling well, and the mind says, no, it's not going to happen today. You know, every single meditation I eventually open into the into home, into the field of being. You know, and I may not stay there, you know, very long like I used to, but, you know, I go there and then I go back the air up arrow into my mind, but then I see what's going on and I bring it the compassion of my heart. And I could remember the other day, you know, this just arose inside of me. This cancer is the next perfect step in my healing. And remember, true healing is not having things get better, having things change. That's what we talked about at the beginning. You know, the mind really likes it when it shows up the way it wants it to and doesn't like it. But guess what? There will come a time for all of us that the body will eventually break down. And so true healing, let's learn this before we get into, you know, a severe terminal diagnosis, or we're just old and our body is fading away, that true healing is not having things be different than what they are. True healing is discovering the ability to be with what is. True healing is discovering how to keep your heart open even in the most difficult situations. It's moving from resistance to how things are to acceptance. Now, because our mind is dualistic, you know, good, bad, right, wrong, it thinks that acceptance is about being a weak-willed ninny, or it's about giving up, or it's about losing. No. True acceptance is about finding this stable place, this truth that who you are is awareness, that can allow life to arise and pass away, arise and pass away, and it doesn't ruffle your feathers. So the invitation is to watch your mind as it likes and dislikes all day long. In fact, that's a powerful, powerful practice. You know, maybe for the rest of today, you just notice whether your mind is liking or disliking. And because it's so easy to get caught up in the stream of our thoughts, you could maybe set a timer on your phone and just notice whether your mind is liking and disliking, or notice how it tries so hard. It's always planning everything. You know, people say, you know, in my groups, until they really discover the safety of, oh, my God, you know, my God, that, you know, I didn't say that very well, and I really tried to work it out before you called on me. And then I invite them just to use this time to get to know how much the mind has lost trust in you and in life, that it doesn't know how to just let go and allow what wants to be shared to be shared. How do we get there? By seeing and bringing great compassion to how much our minds try to plan everything. And then notice what it's like when your mind lets go. For me, my belly softens, especially those muscles right above my pubic bone. And when my mind is very busy, I can say to it, oh, thank you so much for trying to take care of me. But it's safe to let go. Life is taking care of me. So let go and be with life as it is. So remember Pema Chodron, the very wonderful and much loved Buddhist nun. Her definition of enlightenment: relaxing into life. So different than I was chasing enlightenment in the 60s and the early 70s, but it's relaxing into life. And I think I'll leave you with the story of Adyashanti. He's also a very beloved teacher of awakening. And he was a Zen student and in his early 20s, a very passionate Zen student. And he was sitting the kind of Zen that the teacher would come around and, hit you with a stick if you were not sitting up straight and so on and so forth. And one day the teacher came in and all he did was, he had a staff in his hand, and all he did was he hit the floor 3 times with the staff. Bam, bam, bam. And then he said, "This is it." And then again, bam, 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 "This is it." And Adyashanti could not figure out what in the heck he was talking about, because at that time he was still caught enough in his mind that he hadn't yet discovered that enlightenment is relaxing into life. So know, as you are exploring this art of stepping outside of your mind, of seeing it, of relating to it, and of bringing it deep compassion, that your mind is not more special or more neurotic than anybody else's. We all make up, remember the 10,000 piece picture puzzle, we all have the same picture puzzle, the same pieces. The picture on it may be different, but all the pieces, they all fit together in the same way. So no, there's nothing to be ashamed of or afraid of inside of you. If you are experiencing it, I have to, and so has everybody else. So be curious. Be passionately curious. If you want to really heal the world, be curious about your mind. Learn how to step outside of it. Learn how to bring it the compassion it needs to calm down, so you can use your mind for the exquisite tool it is, rather than being lost in it. And when that happens, you become a healing presence in the world. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to this edition of What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley. You can access Mary's offerings on her websites, maryomalley.com and whatsintheway.com. Join Mary next time to experience the peace and joy that is always with you on Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.